Then I came to attention. "That was slow," he said. "I'm not looking to win a drill competition," I said.
"What was your interest in Vassal and Coomer?"
"An agenda for an armored branch conference is missing. I need to know if it contained classified information."
"There was no agenda," Willard said. "Vassal and Coomer have made that perfectly clear, to me and to you. To ask is permissible, you have that right, technically, but to willfully disbelieve a senior officer's direct answer is disrespectful. It's close to harassment."
"Sir, I do this stuff for a living. I believe there was an agenda." Now Willard said nothing. "May I ask what was your previous command?" I said. He shifted in his chair.
"Intelligence," he said.
"Field agent?" I asked. "Or desk jockey?" He didn't answer. "Desk jockey." "Did you have conferences without agendas?" I asked. He looked straight at me.
"Direct orders, Major," he said. "One, terminate your interest in Vassal and Coomer, forthwith and immediately. Two, terminate your interest in General Kramer. We don't want flags raised on that matter, not in the circumstances. Three, terminate Lieutenant Summers' involvement in special unit affairs, forthwith and immediately. She's a junior grade MP, and after reading her file, as far as I'm concerned, she always will be. Four, do not attempt to make further contact with the local civilians you injured. And five, do not attempt to identify the eyewitness against you in that matter."
I said nothing.
"Do you understand your orders?" he said.
"I'd like them in writing," I said.
"Verbal will do," he said. "Do you understand your orders?"
"Yes," I said.
"Dismissed."
I counted. 1,000. 2,000. 3,000. Then I saluted and turned around. I made it all the way to the door before he fired his parting shot.
"They tell me you're a big star, Reacher," he said. "So right now you need to decide whether you keep on being a big star or whether you let yourself become an arrogant, smart-ass son of a bitch. And you need to remember that nobody likes arrogant, smart-ass sons of bitches. And you need to remember we're coming to a point where it's gonna matter whether people like you or not. It's gonna matter a lot."
I said nothing.
"Do I make myself clear, Major?"
"Crystal," I said. I got my hand on the door handle.
"One last thing," he said. "I'm gonna sit on the brutality complaint for as long as I possibly can, out of respect for your record. You're very lucky that it came up internally. But I want you to remember that it's here, and it stays active."
I left Rock Creek just before 5 in the afternoon, caught a bus into Washington, D.C., and another one south down I-95. Then I removed my lapel insignia and hitched the final 30 miles to Byrd. It works a little faster that way. Most of the local traffic is enlisted men, or retired enlisted men, or their families, and most of them are suspicious of MPs. So experience had taught me things went better if you kept your badges in your pocket. I got a ride and got out 200 yards short of Byrd's main gate, a few minutes past 11 in the evening. January 4th, after a little more than 6 hours on the road. North Carolina was pitch dark and cold, very cold, so I jogged the 200 yards to heat myself up. I was out of breath when I got to the gate. I was logged in, and I ran down to my office. It was warm inside. The night watch sergeant with the baby son was on duty. She had coffee going. She gave me a cup, and I walked into my office and found a note from Summer waiting for me on my desk. The note was clipped to a slim green file. The file had three lists in it. The women with Humvees list, the women from Irwin list, and the main gate log for New Year's Eve. The first two lists were relatively short. The gate log was a riot. People had been in and out all night long, partying. But only one name was common to all three compilations. Lieutenant Colonel Andrea Norton. Summer had circled the name in all three locations. Her note said,
"Call me about Norton. Hope your mom was okay."
I found the old message slip with Joe's telephone number on it and called him first. "You holding up?" I asked him. "We should have stayed," he said. She gave the nurse one day off, I said. One day was what she wanted. We should have stayed anyway. She doesn't want spectators, I said. He didn't answer. The phone was hot and silent against my ear. I've got a question, I said. When you were at the Pentagon, did you know an asshole called Willard? He stayed quiet for a long moment, changing gears, searching his memory. He'd been out of intelligence for some time.
Squat little man, he said. Couldn't sit still, always shuffling around on his chair, fussing with his pants. He was a desk guy, a major, I think.
Yeah, he's a full colonel now, I said. He just got assigned to the 110th. He's my CO at Rock Creek.
Am I to the 110th? That makes sense.
Makes no sense to me.
No, it's a new theory, Joe said. They're copying private sector doctrine. They think know-nothings are good because they're not invested in the status quo. They think they bring fresh perspectives.
Anything I should know about this guy?
You called him an asshole, so it sounds like you already know about him. He was smart, but he was an asshole for sure. Vicious, petty, very corporate, good at office politics, exclusively interested in number one, excellent ass-kisser. Always knew which way the wind was blowing.
I said nothing. Hopeless with women, Joe said. I remember that. I said nothing.
He's a perfect example, Joe said, like we discussed. He was on the Soviet desk. He monitored their tank production and fuel consumption, as I recall. I think he worked out some kind of an algorithm that told us what kind of training Soviet armor was doing based on how much fuel they were eating. Yeah, he was hot for a year or so. But now I guess he's seen the future. He got himself out while the getting was good. You should do the same. At least you should think about it, like we discussed.
I said nothing.
Meanwhile, watch your step, Joe said. I wouldn't want Willard for a boss.
I'll be okay, I said.
We should have stayed in Paris, he said, and hung up. I found Summer in the O Club bar. She had a beer on the go and was leaning on the wall with a couple of W-2s. She moved away from them when she saw me.
Garber's gone to Korea, I said. We got a new guy.
Who?
A colonel named Willard, from intelligence.
So how's he qualified?
He isn't qualified. He's an asshole.
Doesn't that piss you off?
I shrugged. He's telling us to stay away from the Kramer thing.
Are we going to?
He's telling me to stop talking to you. He says he's going to turn down your application. She went very quiet, looked away.
Shit,
she said. I'm sorry, I said. I know you wanted it. She looked back at me.
Is he serious about the Kramer thing?
She asked. I nodded. He's serious about everything. He had me arrested at the airport to make all his various points.
Arrested?
I nodded again. Someone ratted me out for those guys in the parking lot.
Who?
One of the grunts in the audience.
One of ours? Who?
I don't know.
That's cold.
I nodded. Never happened to me before. She went quiet again.
How's your mom?
She said. She broke her leg, I said. No big deal.
They can get pneumonia.
I nodded again. Yeah, she had the X-ray. No pneumonia. Her lower eyelids moved upward.
Can I ask the obvious question?
She said. Is there one?
Aggravated battery against civilians is a big deal. And apparently there's a report and an eyewitness, good enough to get you arrested.
So?
So why are you still walking around?
Willard's sitting on it.
But why would he, if he's an asshole?
Out of respect for my record, that's what he said.
Did you believe him?
I shook my head. There must be something wrong with a complaint, I said. An asshole like Willard would use it if he could, that's for sure. He doesn't care about my record.
Can't be something wrong with a complaint. A military witness is the best kind they can get. He'll testify to whatever they tell him to. It's like Willard be writing a complaint himself.
I said nothing.
And why are you here at all?
She asked. I heard Joe say, you should find out who wanted you at Bird badly enough to pull you out of Panama and replace you with an asshole. I don't know why I'm here, I said. I don't know anything. Tell me about Lieutenant Colonel Norton.
We're off the case.
So, just tell me for interest's sake.
It isn't her. She got an alibi. She was at a party in a bar off post, all night long. About 100 people were there with her.
Who is she?
PsyOps instructor. She's a psychosexual PhD who specializes in attacking an enemy's internal emotional security concerning his feelings of masculinity.
She sounds like a fun lady.
She was invited to a party in a bar. Someone thinks she's a fun lady.
Did you check who drove Vassal and Coomer down here? Summer nodded.
Our gate guys list him as a Major Marshal. I looked him up. He's a 12-corps staffer on temporary detached duty at the Pentagon. Some kind of blue-eyed boy. He'd been over here since November.
Did you check phone calls out of the D.C. hotel? She nodded again.
There weren't any,
she said.
Vassal's room took one incoming call at 12:28 in the morning. I'm assuming that was 12 Corps calling from Germany. Neither of them made any outgoing calls.
None at all?
Not a one.
Are you sure?
Totally. It's an electronic switchboard. Dial 9 for an outside line, the computer records it automatically. It has to, for the bill.
Dead end. Okay, I said. Forget the whole thing.
Really?
Orders are orders, I said. The alternative is anarchy and chaos. I went back to my office and called Rock Creek. I figured Willard would be long gone. He was the type of guy who keeps banker's hours his whole life. I got hold of a company clerk and asked him to find a copy of the original order moving me from Panama to Bird. It was 5 minutes before he came back on the line. I spent them reading Summer's lists. They were full of names that meant nothing to me.
I've got the order here now, sir, the guy on the phone said.
Who signed it? I asked him.
Colonel Garber, sir.
Thank you, I said, and put the phone down. Then I sat for 10 minutes, wondering why people were lying to me. Then I forgot all about that question, because my phone rang again, and a young MP private on routine base patrol told me we had a homicide victim in the woods. It sounded like a real bad one. My guy had to pause twice to throw up before he got to the end of his report. Most rural army posts are pretty big. Even if the built infrastructure is compact, there is often a huge acreage of spare land reserved around it. This was my first tour at Fort Byrd, but I guessed it would be no exception. It would be like a small, neat town, surrounded by a county-sized, horseshoe-shaped, government-owned tract of poor, sandy earth with low hills and shallow valleys and a thin covering of trees and scrub. Over the post's long life, the trees would have imitated the gray ashes of the Ardennes and the mighty firs of Central Europe and the swaying palms of the Middle East. Whole generations of infantry training theory would have come and gone there. There would be old trenches and foxholes and firing pits. There would be bermed rifle ranges and barbed wire obstacles and isolated huts where psychiatrists would challenge masculine emotional security. There would be concrete bunkers and exact replicas of government offices where special forces would train to rescue hostages. There would be cross-country running routes where out-of-shape boot camp inductees would tire and stagger and where some of them would collapse and die. The whole thing would be ringed by miles of ancient rusty wire and claimed for the DOD forever by warning notices fixed to every third fence post.
I called a bunch of specialists and went out to the motor pool and found a Humvee that had a working flashlight in the clip on the dash. Then I fired it up and followed the private's directions south and west of the inhabited areas until I was on a rough sandy track leading straight out into the hinterland. The darkness was absolute. I drove more than a mile, and then I saw another Humvee's headlights in the distance. The private's vehicle was parked at a sharp angle about 20 feet off the road, and its high beams were shining into the trees and casting long evil shadows deep into the woods. The private himself was leaning up against its hood. His head was bowed, and he was looking down at the ground.